While autism has been the recipient of a greatly expanded amount of attention and research, there is still so much about this disorder that's still unknown. With April being Autism Awareness Month, my next guest is stepping forward, as he has long in his career, to help not just the families of autistic children, but the medical profession as well gain a better understanding of dealing with and even treating autism. Along with being a neurologist and researcher, he's the co-founder of the Brain Balance Centers, author of the book Autism, The Scientific Truth About Preventing, Diagnosing, and Treating Autism Spectrum Disorders. We say good morning, Dr. Robert Melillo. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Doctor has a couple of websites. I'll give them to you verbally, but of course you know they're over at our website as well, drrobertmelillo.com, and learn more about the Brain Balance Centers. That's obvious and easy to remember, brainbalancecenters.com. You know, when it comes to autism, certainly here in New Jersey, Doctor, it's an extra important topic because the rate of autism is significantly higher than the national average. And the medical profession has now gotten into the habit across the board, fortunately, to call it the autism spectrum disorder. And that spectrum word is key because there are so many variables to the disorder that prevent the challenge, not just discovering a treatment, just to find the cause is the huge challenge right now.
Absolutely. As you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of confusion. And one of the things is that very few people that are out there that are working with children with autism spectrum really understand what makes up the autism spectrum, what actually is it, but most importantly, they don't really have a clue as to what's actually happening in the brain. And if you don't really understand what is actually going on in the brain, then it's really hard to understand, what may be causing it, and also how to be able to intervene, how to be able to treat it, and, you know, if it is something that can be changed or not. So there is a lot of confusion, and that's really where it started with me and with Brain Balance. And even today, at this point, one of my main focuses is really studying and researching not just autism, but ADHD, dyslexia, all these child developmental issues, because they're all increasing at these epidemic levels, and it's obviously very disturbing.
When someone has a depression, they used to call them antidepressants, now they call them mood stabilizers, and they prescribe the mood stabilizers, and someone with a serious depression can become a functioning member of society to varying degrees, of course, because much like autism, depression has its significant variables. Is that a similar situation that research is looking at with autism, where you can stabilize and create someone who can indeed become an active part of society? Is that some inroad that's being explored?
Yeah, there's two or three things that lead to confusion, as you just highlight. One is that, we get caught up in labels, meaning that something is labeled something. But we can look at that, and that label may actually fit to really different situations or even different areas of the brain that have a similar presentation, and that can make things confusing. The other thing in autism especially that leads to the confusion is in my book that I came out with last year, Autism, The Scientific Truth of Preventing, Diagnosing, and Treating Autism Spectrum, I start off by explaining that, a lot of people have certain misconceptions, like, for instance, things about whether this is genetic mutations or not. But in autism, there's two subsets of kids that have an autism diagnosis. One subset are kids that have what we call a syndromic type, which means that they already have some other syndrome, like Fragile X syndrome or tuberous sclerosis or Landau-Kleffner. So they have some sort of known genetic mutation or syndrome, and that's about 10 or 15%, but they're also labeled with autism. And then we have the 85 to 90% of the kids that don't have any genetic mutations and that look very different from those other children, but yet they're all lumped together into this thing called autism spectrum. So you see, one kid with autism can have these really severe problems and presentations, and then you see other people with autism that really are extremely high functioning, going to MIT, that are really, at a genius level. So that adds to the confusion, and a lot of it is nomenclature, and a lot of it is that, people don't really understand that just because you have an autism diagnosis, it may not really be what we call autism.
Talking with Dr. Robert Melillo, who, along with being the co-founder of the Brain Balance Centers, he is a neurologist and researcher, author of the book, as he mentioned, Autism, The Scientific Truth about preventing, diagnosing, and treating autism spectrum disorders. Dr. drrobertmilolo.com and brainbalancecenters.com are the doctors' respective websites. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. You know, as far as people labeling and having expectations, it's also important for not just families, but the medical professionals who are caring for autistic children to have realistic expectations that, you know, like it or not, and as tough as it is to either tell a parent or to admit to it as a parent, that just maybe little Jimmy is not going to have a full active social life, and there are going to be limitations in Jimmy's life. Just as a, this might be an extreme analogy, but Adam Lanza, who did the Newtown shooting, is believed to have had Asperger's syndrome. That's an offshoot of autism. But Mommy Lanza apparently tried to force a full active and, in her view, an orderly life, and maybe thought that teaching him how to operate a gun might be a way to embellish a sense of order and discipline in him. And, well, that didn't exactly turn out as I guess Mom planned to have it turn out.
You're absolutely right. It's a great question that you ask, and it really highlights really maybe the core issue, especially with autism. I think, if anything, it's been more the opposite, that the medical professionals that intervene, or psychology or in education, there's been this pervasive attitude for the most part that nothing can be done, that these are genetic mutations, which in the majority of cases they're not, and that there, you know, is permanent changes in the brain that can't be corrected, and that there's nothing that can be done about it. And so, you know, many cases I've had, you know, thousands of parents that have come into our centers that have said, I was told to just start looking for an institution. And again, it depends on the level of whether we're dealing with this syndromic type or not. So what's happened, though, is that in the case of, let's say, Adam Lanza, is that, you know, parents are given this basic compensatory package that is says, well, we can't really fix these problems. We can't really change them. All we can do is try to compensate for them, and we'll only do that up to a certain point. But then once you get out of high school, you're on your own. And because the pervasive attitude has been there's nothing that we can do, there really hasn't been much of an effort made from a professional standpoint, and it doesn't really correlate with really the cutting-edge research. So that, for instance, you know, out of University of Connecticut, and there was another major research paper that came out last year that showed that at least in 30% of individuals with even severe autism, that when they were evaluated after various types of treatments several years later, 30% of them no longer met the criteria for autism at all. They were completely normalized. So we know that it is possible to normalize people. And I think that in the mainstream media, there's also been the kind of this lack of awareness, so that we haven't really raised the awareness that this is really an epidemic, that these things are changing. And because they're being driven by the environment, we can actually change them. And so I think that if there's more resources for parents, so no one's talking to the parents, no one's telling them what to do. So this woman in Connecticut tries to do what she thinks is best, and it may end up being wrong. But, you know, a lot of it is our fault because we're ignoring it and we're not giving them the information. And what information we are giving them is typically wrong.
Doctor mentioned about environmental influences, too. There was a study last year from Harvard University School of Public Health. They determined that pregnant women exposed to high levels of diesel particulates or mercury were twice as likely to have an autistic child compared with peers in low pollution areas. And that mercury element, too, Doctor, I guess is what has given cause and rise in the fears of some of the mandatory vaccine cocktails that children are forced to have for school admission or programs like that.
Yeah, well, you know, when we talk about environmental factors, what we're really talking about is risk factors, right? So we're saying that there are certain risk factors, that if you have been exposed to certain things or you have certain things going on in your body, in both men and women, that this elevate your risk of having a child with a disorder. Now, I mean, this is something we've known for a long time, right? We know that we tell women not to drink alcohol and smoke when they're pregnant. Why? Because we know that if you do that, it elevates your risk of having a child with a disability. It doesn't guarantee it. We know, you know, there were many of us born at a point when mothers smoked and drank alcohol and it was considered normal. But we learned that there were risk factors, and nobody would argue with that fact, right? And we know that if we then eliminate smoking and drinking, let's say, in pregnant women, we can look and say, okay, we've lowered the number of children being born with, you know, certain types of disabilities or certain birth defects. And so therefore, we could say reasonably that we prevented it, right? And so really, that's where a lot of this is going. And that's what I highlight in my book, right? Identified in my book was 50 of the best known environmental factors. And there's many of them. The things, like you said, pollution, things like if a mother has a or a father has a problem with obesity, diabetes, or hypertension, those elevate the risk of 60 to 150% each. We know a recent study came out showing fathers over 46 have a 300% increased risk of having a child with autism and a 1,300% increased risk of having a child with ADHD versus, let's say, a male at 24 that has a child. We know women over 35. We know that there are vitamin deficiencies, folic acid and iron deficiencies that contribute to it. We know certain pesticides. We know if a mother took Prozac. We know if a mother has a flu virus. These are all things that elevate the risk, and these are things that in most cases are avoidable or identifiable, or we can eliminate them in the parent, and we can say, okay, these are the things that are going to elevate your risk. And so if you avoid them, or we document that there's pesticides in your system, if we detoxify your system, if we give you certain vitamins, if we lower your blood pressure and normalize your sugar and reduce your body weight, these are all things that will possibly, especially if they're done preconception or prenatally, they may prevent the disorder. And what we've also seen is last week, New England Journal of Medicine, a study just came out showing that, you know, pretty clearly identifying something that I've said and many others have said, that autism starts in the womb. So usually we've been able to identify around second trimester. So that means that something like vaccines isn't the cause of autism because it's already there. Now, does it contribute to the symptoms or make it worse or something like that? But the fact is it starts in the womb, and reasonably it may really even start preconception in the health of the parents.
We can go into a whole host of surveys. Some are general, some are specific. The important numbers to lead this segment with: 1 in 68 children is now diagnosed with the autism spectrum disorder nationally. Boys nearly 5 times more likely than girls to have autism. And here in New Jersey, it's an extra important cause for concern because it's estimated that 1 in 48 and 1 in 28 boys has autism. So knowledge is indeed the key to power and awareness for both the family as well as the medical professionals. And that's why Dr. Melillo's book, Autism, The Scientific Truth About Preventing, Diagnosing, and Treating Autism Spectrum Disorder, is indeed your path to that necessary information and options and opportunities for a better way and stronger way to deal with autism spectrum disorder. As we recognize April being Autism Awareness Month, that's one of the keys that the good doctor supplies. Learn more about doctor's work, his writings, at his websites, drrobertmelillo.com and brainbalancecenters.com. Dr. Robert Melillo, thanks so much for the awareness you raise, the path to facts that you provide, and thanks for being here this morning.
Well, thank you, and thank you again for you raising awareness. And I think the overall message here is that this is actually good news because it means that we can actually, parents can take control of this. And the other good news is that we have 5 Brain Balance Centers in New Jersey, and we have more in the Philly market. So, you know, people, we're out there, and there is help out there on the way and information that they can get. So thank you very much.